Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email and question. My girlfriend and I listened to you on the radio.
And I wanted to talk with you a little bit about that email. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your own addiction. I feel so blessed to be here with you tonight. Hi there, I'm Carol the Coach, and my real name is Carol Jurgensen Sheets. I'm out of Indianapolis, Indiana, and as you well know, you probably either got this show through blogtalkradio.com or you subscribe to me on iTunes. And for somebody who just may be finding the show for the first time, know that you can absolutely subscribe to every episode that I have recorded. Now, that's about 70, 75, 80. Hey, I've lost count. And I have to admit, on my different pads, whether that be the iPad, the iPod, or the iPhone, or my computer, I have different shows, so I've had to go back and hit every single one individually. On my iPad, it just came on every single one. So if you don't think you're getting every single week, I want you to go back and I want you to download every show. I promise you it's worth it. How do I know? Well, one, despite my humility and ability to be humble, I think it's a fantastic show. You get information from a variety of resources, a variety of guests. Okay, I grant you that not every show may be for you. But it is certainly worth two things. One, taking a listen and deciding, do I want to hear the rest of the show? And two, you know, you may learn something about your partner. You may learn something about yourself as you were a child. Like, for instance, I got to tell you, tonight we're going to be doing a show on teen porn. And that's how I got into this business. I was getting calls from superintendents and school people all over the state because I was comfortable with this subject before I was even certified. And they were saying, hey, you know, kids are out of control. They're having sex on the bus, oral sex. They're videotaping it. It's being spread, you know, globally. We don't know what to do with this. This is bigger than we are. We don't know what to do to control it. And so that's what got me interested in this field. And then as I explored, I found out how compulsive this addiction is and how it affects everybody in different ways. And so tonight I am happy to be interviewing just an amazing person, Alex Lerza, who is a therapist, speaker, and writer who talks about healthy sexuality, and he works at the Christian Counseling Center in San Jose as a marriage family therapist intern. He's completed his master's degree from Santa Clara University in 2012, and he became a CSAT through the International Institute of Trauma and Addiction. He's the author of the Healthy Sexuality blog, the Teen Recovery Handbook from Porn and Sex Addiction, and he's also the creator of the Teen Recovery Program from Sex and Porn Addiction, the only intensive outpatient program in the Silicon Valley for teens with sexual addiction. He's married. He's got a son himself. He loves to fly fish. He's just got a variety of talents and, you know, obviously a passion for helping teens work through their compulsive behavior, especially pornography. You know, and he says, pornography use among teens is rewiring a whole generation's brains. Now think about that and think about you. If you're a young man, you probably have dealt with this 100% because you have had access to the internet your entire life. If you're an older man or female, you may not have had the internet as your brain was reshaping and developing, but you know what? We all must admit that it does rewire the neural pathways in the brain. And so this has to be addressed from a variety of directions. Now, due to the digital native versus digital immigrant divide, parents are often unaware of their teens' online behaviors. So if you're a sex addict or you're a partner of a sex addict and you're worried about your kids, this is the show for you. And I just wrote about this in a Normal magazine in Indianapolis called Indie Kids. And, you know, I said, as a therapist, I am advising people to do things today that I never would have had them do 20 years ago. Never. And then I say, and please don't take me graphically, but I say I would have slipped my wrist lengthwise as opposed to have advised marital couples to give polygraph tests, to check GPS, to have parents do GPS checking, to have them check keystrokes on their children's internet. But if it's allowed in your state and if you have evidence that proves your child has had a problem with this, then it's your obligation to stay on top of it so that you can protect them from themselves and protect them from a digital world out there that's going to rewire their brain. Now, that's what I think, but it'll be interesting to see what Alex says about teen recovery and sex addiction. You know, this man has made this his passion, and I have to admit it, he's far more an expert than I, even though I've been in the business 33, 34 years. Now, interestingly enough, he says, to make matters worse, teens are oblivious to pornography's impact on their brain and sexuality. Even the sex addiction recovery community is slow to realize that pornography has a different effect on adolescents than it does on adults. How bad is it? Now, if you have a question, I want you to jot down this number, and that is 646-595-3284. And feel free to ask Alex or myself a question. You know, he says, according to Norton's survey in 2009, of the 3.5 million users aged 5 to 18 years old, the number four search term is porn for those 7 and under. The number one search term was YouTube. According to a 2013 Covenant Eyes report, the number one search term on YouTube is porn, in that the same report, 7 out of 10 boys under 18 have spent 30 minutes or more on pornography. For girls, it was 1 out of 5. In other words, 3 out of 10 boys have seen bestiality. 1 out of 5 have seen rape scenes, and 15% underage pornography. For girls, 1 out of 10 have seen rape scenes, and 1 out of 10 have seen underage pornography. Now, you know, when we're talking about why are all these killings occurring in the United States and, you know, all over the world, but certainly it appears more rampant here. And when we look at the murders, the violence, the rape, I maintain it's gaming, it's internet porn, it's media. Kids are becoming desensitized to these issues, and they're incorporating what they believe to be normal in their daily life. And I know you as a parent may say, not my kid, but you are underestimating the impact of what this stuff can do to a child's brain. So Alex's hope is to shed some light on this epidemic and to educate parents and the recovery community, that's me, on how to offer a healthy sexuality to the next generation. And I absolutely can't wait to hear what he has to say. He's going to talk about healthy sexuality. He's going to be talking about what should parents understand. He's going to tell you what you can practically and responsibly do as a parent if your child is viewing online pornography. How can you discourage it? What we as therapists can do in the recovery community to help teens. And how this impacts an adolescent brain differently than an adult brain. How can pornography be harmful to developing a healthy sexuality? So I am really, really looking forward to Alex checking in with us today. And I got to tell you, you know, he and I may have some different opinions. That's what this is all about. It's okay to agree to disagree. He may change some of my opinions. I'm looking forward to that. So be open to what he has to say. Now, interestingly enough, I received some information on an article that was written by Laura Munson, M-U-N-S-O-N. And her column was, after 20 years, my husband announced he wanted a divorce, but I refused to let him go. And she said, you know, she and her husband had been married 14 years. It was 2008. He said, I'm moving out. The children will understand. They will want me to be healthy. And his words came at her like a punch in the stomach. Yet somehow she was able to dodge that. And once she recovered, she said, I don't believe you. He staggered back in surprise. He obviously did not think that she would fight what he was saying. And she wanted to shout at him and scream and call him names, but she just said, you know, honey, there are times in every relationship when one partner needs a break. How can we give you the distance you need without hurting the family? And interestingly enough, I maintain in all kinds of relationships, not just with sex addicts, not just with infidelity, I say marriage is the institution that holds you together when you fall in and out of love with each other. And so Laura takes this kind of stance. She knew that her marital problems had been building for a long time. And on the surface, despite the fact that they had achieved their dreams, living in a comfortable farmhouse on 20 acres of land with 2 children, dogs, horses, a really good life, they were both experiencing a lot of failures, and it was taking their toll. So she knew that that stress could affect somebody negatively. And it hit her husband hard, and he began to question everything, and he started to act out. And she said to herself, you know, my experience says that this is temporary, and I'm not going to go down with the fight. And you know, despite the fact that he seemed very selfish and very cruel, and she hated the behavior, she decided to ride out the storm. So I would just totally encourage you to take a look at this article. And again, it's an amazing article that comes from a now-written book called This Is Not the Story You Think It Is, A Season of Unlikely Happiness. When somebody cheats, how do you stick with it, have faith, and work through the relationship issues to get stronger? So I highly recommend you get Laura Munson, L-A-U-R-A, Munson, M-U-N-S-O-N, her book, This Is Not the Story You Think It Is. All right, so now we're going to be talking about teen porn. And I have Alex on the line, and I want to welcome you to the show. How are you today?
Hi, Carol. I'm doing great. I'm really glad I get to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, I'm really glad, too, because this is good information. Parents are at a real loss, and although our media is beginning to talk about it, they're not necessarily interviewing the experts. They're interviewing therapists that, quite frankly, have said to me, I want to help, but I don't even begin to know what to say, what to advise, and how to put families back together when teenage porn, well, porn has affected their teenager's brain and their teenager's life. So, you know, I know that you have made this a mission, and I want to ask you, you know, what led you to want to work with teens who are addicted to this type of pornography?
Well, I love being certified like yourself, and, you know, like you, I see so much damage, you know, because a lot of the guys I see are married. You know, some of them are estranged from their kids. There's just so much damage that I was like, how can we begin to get ahead of this a little bit? And, you know, even in my own life, you know, I realized I sit on the divide between the digital immigrants and the digital natives, which is 1980, and that's when I was born. And so, you know, I kind of looked around and saw that there wasn't really a lot of resources for teens, and not a lot of willingness to reach out to them among the CSATs I know, even in the area, just because I think, you know, dealing with adolescent population, you know, there's a generational divide, there's, you know, family dynamics, there's so much that goes into it. But, you know, I just began to look more and more into it and realize, wow, these kids, they're, you know, their parents don't understand the impact that pornography is having on them and may not even be aware that they're even looking at it. And so, you know, my eyes just, you know, grew wider and wider and seeing that there's this a silent epidemic happening. It's quite disturbing, actually.
Well, 100%, it's disturbing from a relational aspect and from a self-esteem aspect, but it's really disturbing from a neural pathway perspective, how the brain is affected by internet pornography at an early age, probably 3, 4, 5 on up. So tell me a little bit about what impact you think pornography has on the adolescent brain, and how is that different from the adult brain?
Yeah, one thing I think people may not know is that an adolescent brain is not an adult brain with less experience. It is has a different structure to it than it does an adult brain. And so some of the things that, you know, make an adolescent brain more susceptible, actually, to pornography addiction and sexual conditioning is that they have less of the prefrontal cortex developed, which is the, you know, CEO part of your brain, the, hey, let's think about this and make smart decisions, and their limbic system, which, you know, pumps out kind of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll chemicals, is on overdrive. And so here you have, you know, these teens with this adolescent brain that is geared for not having much impulse control, and you pair that with pornography, which is hardcore streaming pornography, where you can just be endlessly lost in this video and that video and then the next scene and the next scene. And so that's why the pornography affects teens a little bit differently than adults who, you know, maybe have seen Playboy magazines or seen some videos while they were growing up, but they didn't have the endless novelty, which pumps out more dopamine, which is really the hook to addiction. So, and I think that is part of that cultural divide of like, well, I looked at pornography a few times and, you know, it wasn't like extremely harmful to me. And so I think that's one of those misconceptions that parents may have, is that hardcore streaming video pornography affects the adolescent brain much differently.
Yeah, it's like they compare themselves, as most people do. They compare their own experience to other people's, and they forget that it's 100% different, both in terms of what an adult may have looked at with internet porn, you know, and two, how many scenes a child can watch in a short period of time that was not available in 1998 when porn became popular, internet porn became popular. I mean, clearly they are figuring out how to increase the amount of scenes and, of course, the intensity as well.
Mm-hmm.
So frequency and intensity has a lot to do with that dopamine that's produced. And I remember when I was first becoming educated, before I was a CSAT, and one of the things that they said at a SASH conference, which is, you know, obviously sexual advancement for sexual health, and they said that we are seeing chemicals we've never seen before. And I remember writing to David and asking him, hey, what are these chemicals? What are these enzymes? What are being produced? And he said, Carol, we're a work in progress. We don't really know yet. So the chemicals that you're aware of that get produced when teens look at internet porn are dopamine. And what else?
Delta-phos-B is the next big one. That's, you know, dopamine basically says, here's the reward. Delta-phos-B says, okay, we're going to create the structure in your brain so that your brain remembers to repeat this behavior. So that basically is what Delta-phos-B builds, kind of the superhighway, which makes it, you know, more and more and more likely that you're going to continue down that same path, which is, you know, the addictive path, and why, you know, teens and even adults find it so hard to get out of the trance of addiction. And then I think the other thing that, you know, we're realizing and probably you're seeing is that because so much of pornography, you know, they did a survey, 50% of scenes have some sort of verbal or physical abuse in them, some sort of aggression, and usually it's towards women, that the other thing that you can pair with dopamine that gives you a bigger high is adrenaline. And so if you're watching violence, you're pairing violence with sexuality. This goes back to what you were saying earlier about kind of how we're seeing so much violence in our society. If all these teens are pairing sexuality and violence together, adrenaline and dopamine, that gives a bigger high. And so, you know, there's the addictive part, which is I want to, you know, I need to do this over and over again. But then there's the conditioning part, which is, in order for me to be aroused, now there has to be some sort of aggression. There has to be some sort of adrenaline component to it. And so that, to me, is actually, you know, probably in some ways as dangerous as the addictive part because, you know, a lot of guys who are older, they had a time when their first sexual experiences might have been with people. But these guys, their first sexual experiences are with a screen, with adrenaline, with dopamine, with aggression, with violence. And so what feels, quote-unquote, normal to them is a whole new thing. And that's kind of the scary part of how their brains, I think, are being rewired.
Now, I have to think about this because clearly when we first started Patrick Carnes' classes and became certified, He talked about a variety of experiences that occur when you combine two highly charged experiences at the same time. I think they called it fusing. And he referenced, you know, doing cocaine and internet pornography, or cocaine and prostitution. And I also think that fusing would include exactly what you said. It's when you combine aggression with internet porn to increase intensity and, unfortunately, later on, frequency. Are you aware of that concept?
Yeah, the kind of the associations that the brain makes between two different experiences chemically, like how a lot of times alcoholics, if they smoke, whenever they drink, whenever they smoke, they might still feel the craving for alcohol because of those kind of that fusing of nicotine and dopamine from the alcohol. So I think that's exactly kind of what's happening with teens and pornography, and the aggression and the dopamine together is fusing for them.
Okay, so now let me ask you something else. A lot of times people want to believe that pornography can be a healthy part of sexuality, and I'm talking adults here. And so I'm wondering if, A, what your thoughts are, and we know that this is all speculative. It may be based on empirical data and research, but it also may be an opinion. I mean, clearly, I saw group phenomena take place when oral sex was given on the bus. I saw kids that would never have shared sexual acts take their phones out and take video and pass it on to everybody they knew. That was kind of that group mentality. Now, do you believe that pornography can be helpful in any way, shape, or form in healthy sexuality for adults? And then do you believe pornography is harmful in developing a healthy sexuality?
Yeah, so let me take the second question first. Can it be harmful? You know, I think what you see a lot of times, and I think what people forget is that, you know, most of the pornography, it is a commodification. It's a business. And so, you know, you're seeing a commodification of sex, which often doesn't represent what a intimate relationship really looks like. And so, you know, I had one of the guys in a group ask me that, you know, like, hey, you know, is this just some religious point of view being espoused about pornography? And, you know, I said, really, a lot of it just depends on where you want to land. I think if you want to land in a monogamous relationship, then what's going to help you enjoy that relationship the most and what's going to detract from it the most in terms of, you know, pornography's effect? And so that's kind of what I pose to people when talking about it. Is it good or bad? Is it more like, well, where do you want to land, and is pornography helpful or harmful in, you know, getting you to that place and enjoying whatever that is? There's also different types of pornography, too. There's, you know, sex education sort of pornography, which I think is, you know, very different than what, you know, the big conglomerate pornographers put out. And so, you know, but again, I think it all depends on, you know, how you're wired and what it means to you and how you're interpreting the experience. One of the models I really appreciate comes from Wendy Maltz, who wrote The Porn Trap, and she created this CERTS model, which is, in terms of defining healthy sexuality, is that, you know, first there has to be consent. A lot of times in porn, it's about power dynamics. There has to be equality. So is the stuff you're watching about equality? Because you are training your brain. Is there respect? Is there trust between the people? And is there safety? And so, I think that's a helpful paradigm in whatever kind of you're looking at in terms of how you're influencing your sexuality.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, clearly, I'm familiar with Wendy's work, and yet I don't think I had that reference stored in my brain in terms of what she says. You know, I do talk to people that don't in any way, shape, or form seem to have a problem incorporating pornography in their sexuality. My fear is that it's such a slippery slope. And just like crack, you may have been able to do marijuana or anything, ecstasy, acid, heroin, and there may be one drug that brain locks and creates a whole cycle of addiction. And so it's kind of like you flirt with disaster when you participate in something that seems very harmless. Now, let me ask you, what is some of the advice that you give parents, because they don't get good, healthy advice? What do you tell them about their children, about their pornography use? Prior to you coming on, I read some of the stats you gave us about children and what they've seen and bestiality and things like that. So give us a little education. Pretend that you're actually doing a little workshop here, and give us some info that we can take to the bank and take to our friends, our loved ones, and our neighbors.
Yeah. I think just one other stat in terms of parents that I think is helpful to know is 70% of parents don't have any filters on their computers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that just highlights that cultural divide. So I think the first thing, and I actually just did give a presentation to a bunch of parents, is that, one, I think the first thing is just be curious and be open and educate yourself about it. I think parents can feel so much shame and anxiety, and I think sometimes, you know, those emotions can hijack the process. So my just beginning invitation is just, you know, be gracious toward yourself in this process. You know, there's this cultural thing going on. There's a much bigger thing going on. So just be aware of that. And, you know, if you know the Serenity Prayer, then that's helpful. But having said that about the process, you know, the first, and you would probably totally agree, and most people would agree, most important thing is having a good relationship with your kids. And so I find that I meet parents in different parts of the process, where some parents have not really talked with their kids about sex very much, or about what it means to be a digital citizen, or internet safety. And so it's really hard to give broad general advice. So I'll speak from the ideal. I think the ideal is that every parent would develop a healthy sexuality plan for their kids that starts at 2 years old, as soon as they're able to even talk, all the way, you know, throughout life, basically. And that the healthy sexuality plan would be able to provide a counter narrative to what they'll be exposed to in terms of pornography. Because I think we have to... So number one, just expect that your kids have probably been exposed to pornography. But do they have another narrative that helps them understand sex in a different light? Because if there's just one narrative, that's coming from the pornographers and their commodification of sex, well, then that'll have the greatest pull and the greatest power in determining their sexuality. So having relationship, having communication throughout life, developing a healthy sex narrative, you know, either through a religious group you're affiliated with or a community organization or nonprofit or hospitals. You know, Stanford Hospital here has a great program for dads and sons, moms and daughters and dads and daughters, you know, everything, where they really pull out, you know, the science, but also just how we're made as people and what's how do we thrive sexually. Parents need to have an internet safety plan, and so just do you have any filters? NetNanny's great. iBoss is helpful. You need a little bit more savvy to work with that, but that works as well. But having an internet safety plan, developing boundaries around screens like phones and tablets and all that stuff. So having a clear plan about, you know, does a child, when do you, you know, introduce a screen to a child? Because, you know, with a car, the government has set up, you know, standards of like, okay, so you need this education, you need to learn that, then you get your permit, which means you're observed. So having, you know, a boundary process with screen time and what that means, I think is key. I would recommend kind of thinking of it as a permit process where you know, give a little bit of freedom with a screen, monitor, you know, if they're responsible, and over time give more and more freedom and less boundaries in that regard. And so, and then, you know, lastly, in terms of a healthy sexuality plan, you know, knowing where to find the resources and education, like this podcast, my website, you know, I have a blog where you can subscribe, and I, you know, speak to parents about these things. Because as a digital immigrant, if you are one, kind of like going to a different country, you know, if you're going to plan a vacation, you learn all the customs as much as possible, and you do a lot of research so that, you know, you can be aware of what's going on. And so I think having that posture of being a learner, being curious as a parent, not criticizing as much the technology, but trying to understand it so that you can have a conversation, a respectful conversation with your kids. I think are, just to touch briefly on all the essential ingredients, I think, to keeping your kid from being addicted to porn and sexually conditioned to a very unhealthy sexuality.
So in some ways, again, a parent first has to create some emotion regulation so that they're not afraid of what they have found or heard or seen. They have to remain calm and almost with curiosity as opposed to any kind of a judgment.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, because if the shame or anxiety is driving the bus with the, you know, your teen, you know, the teen probably already feels so much shame, and then you know, so I think being curious is the best antidote, you know, so that the teen can reduce their shame, and then if you have less shame, you can reflect on your experience and learn from it. If you feel shame, you just want to escape, which often leads to more acting out in secrecy. So, yeah, so I think being kind, being compassionate, being curious, doesn't mean you don't set boundaries and you don't set limits and all that stuff, but I think that again, is that connection and developing that attachment with your teen that really goes, I think, a long way.
Well, I absolutely know that you're right, and that is very, very good advice. And if you know, they've set some limits for their child and they've put some filters on a phone or on an iPad or, you know, a computer, and they find that their children compulsively stay up in the middle of the night to look at things, share things that get them in trouble with school, interfere with their relationships, obviously your blog exposes parents to how they can handle that situation further. So give us again the name of your blog, because I know that your website is www.alexlerza.com, and your blog is called?
It's a healthy sexuality blog, and it's alexlerza.com/blog. And the best way, I think, to utilize that is just to sign up so you get a weekly, update from whatever I'm writing for that week. And, you know, to the point about, you know, I think this is the problem, Carol. I think this is so great why we get to talk about this right now, is that there's just so few resources. And so I do coaching with parents around this stuff. I think you do, obviously, a ton of coaching with parents, you know, but if there's nobody in your area who can, you know, from a competent place really know how to help you, I think it's just really hard for parents just to be left trying to figure out how to help a teen who's addicted to pornography. And so I hope if you are a parent out there that you do give Carol a call, you check out my blog, and, you know, we'll do our best to try to find local resources for you as well. But know that this is a tough battle because the culture is slow. Even the recovery community is slow in being able to provide, you know, programs for teens. Like you were saying, it's amazing to me that I am the only person in the Silicon Valley, which is, you know, the epicenter of a technology that has a program for teens. I mean, that's just crazy, given that most of the teens in this valley are looking at porn on their iPhone, or looking at porn on their iPhones. So,
well, yeah, and how much do you know about what filters do you believe are the best for an adolescent versus an adult?
Yeah, that's actually a great question, because I think with adults, I mean, it depends where they're at in the process of, you know, their impulse control. But with adults, I really like monitoring better, where, you know, something like Covenant Eyes, and I think you're a proponent of Covenant Eyes, where, you know, you have an accountability partner. So there's a relational context, which is really what you want to develop if you're in recovery, is just kind of this internal observer, kind of your somebody, you know, a wise inner self that can see and think about the consequences of your decisions. But with teens, because of, again, how their brain is structured, you know, they have a Ferrari engine and Pinto brakes. So in terms of how their brains develop. So I would definitely go with something like NetNanny or iBoss or SkyDog. And again, there's some resources on my website where alexlerza.com. You can just go to the resources parent section if you want to look at more of that stuff. But yeah, kids really need, teens really need the kind of the stop sign, the versus just an accountability partner.
Mm-hmm. And for many of our listeners, Covenant Eyes does cost money, but it is it's an important investment in keeping your child safe and in helping them to regulate their own impulses. So I highly recommend some of those as opposed to Canine, which is a free service. But truly, our kids know how to get out of things as well as they know how to get into them. And so,
it gets
very difficult unless you're using some of the best stuff to be able to stay on top of things. So I would encourage anybody to make that investment. And it really is making an investment in their future because, again, you know, you shared some pretty intense stats with us that would make us believe that no child is really safe from what they're seeing because they either get it on mom or dad's computer or their buddy or girlfriend sends them information, their schoolmate. I mean, they may not have gotten on the internet to look themselves, but it comes to them. And once stuff comes to you, then the cookies attach and a child is no longer able to control what comes into the computer or to their iPhone or to their iPod. So,
yeah,
it's just really important to stay on top of it as much as possible. So now...
Yeah.
Oh,
well, can I say one more thing about that, Carol?
Please do.
Just on the filter aspect for parents, you know, one thing I recommend for parents to tell their teens is that, you know, my job is to help keep you safe, and pornography is one of those things that is not safe. And, you know, this filter is a wall. it may be 8 feet or 10 feet high, but if there's, you can climb over it if you want to. But I'm putting it there because I want to give you a chance as you're trying to think about climbing over the wall, thinking about, you know, the possible consequences of doing so. And so, because I think a lot of teens, you know, they experience it as, you know, when parents put in boundaries as, I'm going to try to show you, I'm going to try to go over that and make it kind of a game or a sport. And so that's, you know, I think taking some of the power dynamic out of just parents acknowledging, yeah, there probably is a way to actually get around this software. But, you know, again, I'm just trying to help you think about the consequences of what you're going to get yourself into.
Well, absolutely, and being honest and upfront and modeling that behavior is so important, and that's why parents have, you know, I get a lot of parents that say, if they know I'm looking, it will curb or mask or interrupt what they're really doing, and they'll become more deceitful. And I say, it's still the right thing to do to let them know that you're the parent, that it's your job to keep them safe and healthy, and that you want them to know what the boundaries are. I mean, there's nothing that can hurt when somebody does it that way. So we encourage parents to be honest. And, you know, I get a lot of parents that not only are worried about their children, well, they're adolescent, but there are younger siblings involved, and they wonder how this has affected their younger brothers and sisters. So what practically, you know, should you do if you're a parent and you believe that your younger children may have been exposed to some of their older siblings' pornography?
Yeah, I've seen that happen. And I think one, just helping, I think parents, sometimes their knee-jerk reaction is to put their kids into counseling, you know, if they've been exposed. And I think that's actually great. I wouldn't discourage that at all, of course. But I think sometimes what's even better and going beyond that is for parents themselves to see somebody like a certified sex addiction therapist and say, hey, can you coach me? Can you help me figure out even how to make sense of this and what to do and, you know, what's in my control, what's not in my control, what resources are there? I think that's because, you know, parents can do so much, I think, for their kids. And that in combination with their, you know, giving their kids a chance to talk with a therapist about what that exposure was like. You know, sometimes these exposures, pornography can lead to incest or things like that, you know, because it becomes a hypersexual environment between the siblings. So I think the kids need a safe place, and I think the parents need a safe place, but also an equipping place with really a competent therapist. Otherwise, it could really create a lot of problems for the whole family.
Well, I absolutely would agree with you there, too. So now, you've referenced that even the recovery community is having difficulty with this. And, you know, you and I both know you can only do so much as an individual who's treating people to decide who's their population and how do they wish to serve them. But for the we do have recovery people that listen to this show. So I'm going to ask you, what would you tell recovery people who may have been afraid to tackle adolescent and even younger kids who are involved in pornography?
Yeah, I think my number one invitation is to, you know, for folks to just lean into the population a little bit. And what I mean by that is I know we all have to live by the boundaries of how we're made and what we feel confident in, but I think sometimes we underestimate, you know, the huge resource that we are as certified sex addiction therapists. to the whole community, you know. So speaking, if possible, at schools, if there's the opportunity, I think offering parenting coaching around this issue, if you don't feel comfortable seeing the adolescent, can you advertise that you help parents establish a healthy sexuality plan or internet safety plan or these sorts of things? I think, yeah, CSATs can go a long way in just even kind of tangentially doing that. I think the other invitation I have is for the SAA and the SA recovery community, that's Sexaholics Anonymous and Sex Addicts Anonymous, is to begin to think about ways and kind of the intergroup meetings for access for teens, whether through phone groups or something, because at the moment, the 12-step community is an adults-only community for the most part, and there's a lot of ethical, legal reasons for that. But, you know, by the time these kids are 18 and they've been exposed to pornography for, 8 years of their life or so, we just have to do better, and we have to do more. I know Celebrate Recovery. I'm going to one of their conferences, and they're going to try to establish something for teens. But again, I think if we really want to, get ahead of this issue and understand, the whole rewiring of their brains and what that means, I think those are some of the things that we can do as a community.
Oh, I 100% agree. And then, as simple as we as counselors don't have to have all the answers, but clearly, again, just having your website so that they can refer people to your blog, and then I know that you would be happy to take questions, and I don't know if you Skype or do any kind of consultation via phone or via Skype, but I know that you'd be more than happy to direct them the best that you possibly can. So that may be good enough just to get a parent to the right resource. So go ahead one more time, and I'm going to let people know that we're talking with Alex Lurza. Am I saying that right, Lurza?
Yeah, you got it right, actually, so that's good.
Okay, and his website is www.alexlerza.com. And your phone number, Alex, is?
408-800-6629. That's 408-800-6629. And, yeah, I do Skype consultations, to help get some basic infrastructure for, helping parents create a healthy sexuality plan, internet safety plan, those sorts of things, but really try to help them I do a lot of, here's the best local resource for you, kind of networking. So
that's right. And are there any books that you would recommend? Obviously, your blog is a wonderful resource. And let's face it, people like to keep it short and simple. They like to, they like the bullet points. But are there any books on teenage healthy sexuality and or teenage sexual addiction?
Yeah, so the one book that I really like and I use is What's the Big Deal About Pornography?
Mm-hmm.
And that one is great, especially for parents, because it has a chapter dedicated to parents that, walks parents through, these are the sorts of things you should know and questions you can ask your teen, and that one's great. There's another book called The Parent's Guide to Understanding Social Media, which is, I think, just a helpful kind of bridging the digital immigrant, digital native divide. It kind of is a book that translates for parents, like, here is your child's world. This is the world they live in. This is, what's important to understand and develop boundaries. Those are the two books that I really appreciate. There isn't, again, though, that's why I've written my own curriculum for my teens. You know, there isn't a lot of material for teens that really gives a clinical approach to recovery from addiction and porn addiction. So, again, I think we're still waiting for more authors and for more resources to put some good stuff out there.
And how can clinicians get your curriculum?
I'm going to release my curriculum in August. And so that's something that, you know, through the Certified Sex Addiction Therapist community, people have been asking me to release it. But I've been, you know, going through it, getting feedback, refining it. And so it's a 10-week program that involves the family as well. And so it's, you know, clinical in approach. And I think that's the one thing that I really want to offer is kind of the combining the neuroscience, the psychology pieces together. And so, yeah, you can look for that in August.
Well, fantastic. And so you'll come back on the show when you have that all finalized and we can talk about that and get some clinicians to take the course or have you down. Or because I don't know if you're telling me that is an online course or that is a face-to-face work with Alex course.
Well, I think what I'm probably going to do is right now it's in book form. And
uh-huh.
But there's a ton, so there'll be a book form that anybody will be able to use, you know, like a parent could buy it. But then I'm going to, what I've also been writing is more of a therapist manual. And basically all of the behind-the-scenes work I do with the family and how to just structure and how to basically create your own intensive outpatient program for teens. And so I'll be providing, a seminar and coaching on that end for therapists, and then the book will just be for teens or parents or whoever wants to buy the workbook.
Well, fantastic. I'll look forward to that, and we can trade manuals and just have, because I do a group work for sex addictions for clinicians, and then I do a group work for men so they can also kind of work through their own discovery and journaling. So I look forward to hearing what you got to offer, and I'm sure we can get some clinicians that seems very non-threatening and an easy way to learn about how you can be helpful to kids. I mean, anybody in this field has to on some level really want to start, you know, if we can eradicate it or at least help to manage it at a younger age, then truly we're working with the source as opposed to treating the symptom when they're in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. So, Alex, thank you so much. Again, his website is www.alexlerza.com, and you can reach him at 408-800-6629. I'll look forward to that curriculum coming out, and you've been very helpful tonight. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carol. Thanks for having me. This is great that you're, you know, taking this cause on yourself and having me on, so thank you.
All right. Keep me posted. All your good works, I want to hear about it. And you have a great week.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Okay, well, as you can see, Alex has a wealth of information, and I really highly recommend if you're a parent, even if you don't think this is an issue, you need to be educated, because I'm telling you that just like any addiction, it's unfortunately about people not being honest until a crisis occurs. Now, next week, we have Murray Lee on, and she's going to be talking about some of the exercises and the book that she just wrote for people to work through their feelings about sexual addiction. So we'll look forward to having her on next week. Hey, it's time for me to go. But as always, I'm blessed to have you with me. And as I say at the end of every show, there'll only be one of you at all times. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. I'll see you next week.